Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We are an exceptional nation, and it doesn't mean we fight every war, but it does mean for years, peace through strength, and we stood up for people who were struggling for freedom. And that's what I think we ought to do a lot more of.
Now, I think McCain is insane, personally. Any man who runs from one radio or TV show to another, then runs across the Atlantic, arrives in one country or another, comes back calling for war, is by my definition a lunatic. At the very least, he's a warmonger. I almost feel that we should thank God he lost the election against Obama. I know you can say, what? You heard me. As bad as it is under Obama, I almost feel it was a blessing that this maniac did not become president. Because as sure as I'm sitting here, had this lunatic McCain become president, bombers, B-2 bombers would be flying over Russia or over Ukraine, possibly setting the Third World War in motion. The man is a madman. And boy, does he give Republicans a really bad name. We read today that troops have been sent to Poland. Here we go again. Here we go. Troops to Poland, World War II. It starts with 800 troops in Poland. I guess they're just advisors along the lines of how we started in Vietnam. Headline on Drudge Report, British jets chase off Russian spy planes. Dutch scramble jets after bombers approach. The Dutch, I didn't even know, could fly. I had no idea the Dutch could still fly an airplane. I know that they were busy with sex shops and drugs in the streets. How can they still fly an airplane? I don't know. I guess there's a few of them left. Meanwhile, the anointed one is traveling in Asia trying to see if he can mess up Asia. Now that he's messed up the Middle East and our deals with Russia, maybe he can screw up everything with China, Japan, and Korea, because he's on his way to Asia now, the genius. I'm not going to talk about any of this. What I'm going to talk about is the fact that I have some great sound today, and it begins here. I have to read you what... You know which sound is the best of all that I have? The Homeland Security Advisor, counterterrorism, White House counterterrorism chief, is a woman named Lisa Monaco. I don't know anything about her background. I know that she wears the same type of pantsuits as Hillary, and she seems to have a clone-like appearance to Hillary from the neck down, which unto itself is nothing. I mean, all Republicans look alike from the neck down. But it seems to me all of the women around Obama look like Hillary from the neck down. And whether that signifies something or it's just a sartorial decision, I really don't know. She had the nerve to give a speech saying that you should watch your children because children usually signal when they're about to become terrorists. And she says it's not based on race or religion. Any child can be a terrorist. You see how fair she is? You've got to listen to this, to clip 11. Just listen to clip 11. You're not going to believe where we're at in this country, how far we've fallen as a nation.
I think what I talked about in Cambridge on the anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombings just a few days ago was that violent extremism has been with us in many forms. Unfortunately, even 19 years ago this week in Oklahoma City.
Here we go.
So it comes in many forms.
You know, this gets me nauseous. This gets me nauseous that such a... Stop it! Stop it! Again, Timothy McVeigh, why don't you bring up George Washington and say he was a terrorist to the British? Everybody in the administration avoids the M word. You can't say Muslim, can't say Islam. I mean, the Boston Marathon bombing was caused by two Muslims. Radical Muslims. But she's trying to tell you it was Timothy McVeigh who did it. Listen to the next one, 12. You'll see how much crazier it gets.
What we've seen is extremism comes in any number of forms, and it's not confined to any one community. It's not confined to any one individual of a particular faith. We need to respond to it and reject it regardless of
faith. Well, I think that, frankly, this administration is an example of the extremism that's destroying the world. Your political insanity is a form of extremism that's threatening the survival of the United States of America. It gets even worse in clip 13. Listen to this now.
What we found from one study is in 80% of the cases, community members saw warning signs, but they didn't see them as an indicator of a problem, whether it was a teacher hearing from a student that they were interested in traveling abroad to fight, whether it was a parent seeing a kid being more confrontational.
Did you hear what this woman just said? Now, this is not just the caller to a talk show. This is Barack Obama's Homeland Security Advisor. Her name is Lisa Monaco. She bent over backwards to avoid the word Muslim or Islam. She says students who are interested in traveling abroad to fight. What does that mean? Doesn't she mean Muslims traveling abroad to fight? Or does she mean Irish traveling abroad to have a boxing match in Dublin? Do you see how insane the political class has become in this country? They're not protecting us from anything. They see us as the enemy. They protect the Muslims, they protect the Islamists, and they attack anybody else in this country. And now you understand why the people are at a boiling point with this insane administration. This, to me, takes the cake today. So that's it. I got it out of my system. I feel much better. It's like a loose tooth that came out. It gets worse, though. It gets even worse. I'm just getting started. Yesterday, we talked about the damage that affirmative action has done to America over the last 40 years, finally being somewhat put in its place by the U.S. Supreme Court, not covered by most of the major networks for a fear of offending minorities, who have terrorized them, by the way, with fears of boycotts, fears of standing up and screaming racism at any turn. And sure enough, a man who's built his entire career on extremism, hatred, and racism had something to say about the Supreme Court ruling. Let's listen to General Electric's spokesman, Al Sharpton. That's clip two, Eric. Clip two for
a society based on simple justice. As I travel the country, many say to me, Reverend Al, why do we need government intervention? Why do we need government laws to bring that about? Because it was government laws that helped to make it unequal.
Al, let me ask you something. Where did you earn your reverend degree from? Millions of people are asking this question, Reverend Sharpton. My PhD was earned from the University of California at Berkeley after many years of study and a dissertation that is in the scholarly journals. And I'm very proud of my PhD, which is why some call me Dr. Savage. But why are you called Reverend Sharpton? Can you explain to America where you got your divinity degree from? I'm sure you did. No chance in a million that you'd make it up. Where did you get your reverend degree from, your divinity degree? Now, if you want to hear more about it, the NAACP chimes in. And before we play clip number four from the NAACP, which is very angry, you'll understand, that they no longer have a tool to beat people up with called affirmative action, at least in the state of Michigan. It's limited to the state of Michigan, by the way. Every state in the land should have a ballot initiative to drive this Frankenstein out of their states, so that people have a fair chance from any race. But the NAACP says that the new ruling by the Supreme Court creates a higher hurdle. Of course it does. Of course it creates a higher hurdle. Now you actually have to earn a place to get the place. Of course it's a higher hurdle. You can't go to Harvard with an F, a D, or an F. See what I mean? Now it's harder to get into Harvard with a D average. A lot of kids would like to go to Harvard on a full scholarship with a D average. But you see, you can't do it anymore, I guess. If you have an affirmative action horror story to tell so that America can finally hear the pain you've lived with for 30 years because of the liberal social engineers who stole your birthright from you, stole your American rights from you, taken away fairness from you, you can call me at 855-400-7282. Let's listen to the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement Only of Colored People, in clip number four.
This really is a case about restructuring the political process in a way that disfavors racial minorities. And the doctrine of political restructuring actually comes to us from the decade after Brown versus Board of Education, when so many jurisdictions tried to create higher hurdles for minorities who were seeking to enforce the promise of Brown and seeking to enforce equality.
Total nonsense, double talk, double speak, rubbish, pure rubbish. Let me give you an example. In the state of California, the Asian people, mainly Chinese Americans, are so successful at school because they come from a culture of learning. They come from parents who drive them to learn. They come from a book learning culture where education is considered very important. So many Chinese have gotten into the great universities in the University of California, such as UC Berkeley, that they've actually created affirmative action to keep Chinese Americans out. Now, is that your idea of fairness? Because as far as I'm concerned, if it was 100% Asian, it wouldn't bother me. In other words, if you based it purely on grades, go ahead. Make my day. I'd like to see a university filled with smart kids. I could care less about what they look like. But if you're going to fill a university with dummies based upon something other than achievement, then what you're going to have is what you have today, which is universities that are worthless, which is why more and more people are turning away from going to college or sending their children to college. It sickens me to hear this kind of double talk and double speak rhetoric, which comes out of, well, let me stop right there. It goes on to clip five. Here again is the NAACP saying that, oh, boo-hoo, the Supreme Court was wrong. In other words, the Supreme Court finally said you're wrong and you don't like it? Let's hear clip five now.
The problem with it is that it essentially creates a higher hurdle for those who seek to deal with the issue of race and admissions. They would have to amend the Constitution.
A higher hurdle for those who seek to deal with the issue of race and admissions. So you can't get into Harvard with a D average now. Now you actually have to compete and get an A average. So, of course, it creates a higher hurdle. What is she talking about? What is she babbling on about? It's nonsense. Utter rubbish. We have a Supreme Court. We don't need a kangaroo court. And that's the end of it. I wish every state in the land had such a mandate. Let children apply based upon what they've done. Let them apply based upon what they have done. If you read Justice Sotomayor's dissent, you see that Justice Sotomayor, the brightest Latina in the history of the world, never belonged on the Supreme Court. Her dissent ran longer than the four opinions because she can't form an opinion without babbling on and on and on. Listen to clip six now, where the argument itself undoes itself. Listen to six.
I have to say, if your viewers read nothing else, they should read Justice Sotomayor's dissent in this case, joined by Justice Ginsburg, because Justice Sotomayor, I think, presents with to us the most powerful
nonsense
articulation.
She doesn't know her behind from her brains.
Race in our country.
Ah, she doesn't know anything. She was picked based upon her Hispanic heritage. Stop it! Stop your double talk. I can't take it anymore. Sotomayor was a moron. Can you say one thing she's ever written that you can remember? Give me one case Sotomayor ever decided that will be remembered in legal history. Give me one case. There is none. You look back in the past. In order to get to the Supreme Court, you had to be a brilliant jurist. You remember a name like Brandeis, Justice Brandeis. It's named the university after Brandeis. Now, of course, his name has been sullied by what they've done to the university now. Brandeis has become a cesspool of liberalism, a madhouse, a madhouse, upside-down madhouse. But in his day, Brandeis was a brilliant jurist. So he was nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, all of a sudden, it's like the Mao Zedong days in communist China under Obama. Where they pick totally unqualified people based solely upon race or sex or sexual orientation, not upon qualifications. Tell me what qualifications Sotomayor had to be made a Supreme Court justice. Tell me one opinion she wrote that is brilliant, because I don't know of any, and I've studied this issue. I'm sick of this. That's why the society is melting down. It's melting down because we've all stood here and taken this rubbish from the left-wing social engineers. And the end line is we're now a laughing stock in the world. What number is America in terms of education? How far have we fallen in the 30 years of affirmative action? Okay, you don't like reality, do you? Let me give you some reality. We are once the leaders in the world in our children's abilities in math and science. We're now number 30 or something like that. Why? Why don't you put two and two together and figure out how we got to four? We got the four because you put unqualified people into the teachers' roles, and then you put kids into schools they can never keep up with. And so what you did was, then you lowered the values of the school and said, it's the racism in the school. It's enough already. I remember I went to Queens College when I was young, City University. We didn't have the money. They didn't have money to send me to private school. It was a very competitive college at the time. It was as good as any private school. It was based upon the 100 great books at the University of Chicago curriculum. And it was very difficult. Believe me, it was difficult. A few years after I graduated, they turned it over because the screaming about racism to a thing called open admissions, where there were no longer any qualifications necessary to go to this great city college. You know what happened? The university became a garbage can. A garbage can. Nobody could understand what happened to a great university. It was trashed by liberalism. You know, sometimes the road to hell is paved with very good intentions. I'll take a quick break. Give me 15 minutes, and I'll give you America. I'm Michael Savage.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
It was the law and enforced laws that made the playing field uneven. And the government must bring laws until the field is even for everyone. The government must undo what the government helped do.
Boy, he sure got that wrapped down, doesn't he? He's suffering, you know. You know, Al Sharpton's really been suffering from racism. Look how he seems underweight lately. I guess he just can't even afford a good meal. He's suffering, boy. Cushy job, money flowing in, visiting the White House as frequently as he would like. He's a frequent flyer into the White House. I guess he needs the government to help him because he's not doing well enough. Isn't it interesting that Jesse High Jackson and Al Sharpton claim that they're fighting for the African-American people when it's mainly themselves who seem to be benefiting? It is sickening. I believe in quality, and in order to have quality, in order to have quality in anything, you need to have equality. I mean, I've heard that the bad analogy of affirmative action applied to sports. That's a baby talk, but it's true. It's true. You want affirmative action? Let's go to the NFL. Take a guy 5'4" who weighs 140 pounds and say to him, oh, you've been deprived. You've been deprived. Let's put you on an NFL team and you see him get crushed on the field. What do you do, blame racism on that? Don't you see that they're applying the same insanity now to the military? Look what they're doing to the U.S. Marines, to the Navy SEALs. They're putting women in combat positions. Wonderful, great. They want to die for the country. I bless them for it. But what's it going to do to the platoon she's in? What's it going to do when she can't carry a pack or carry a man on her back off a battlefield? What's it going to make the girls in the White House feel good that there's women in combat? This is what happens with affirmative action. It's total insanity. Everybody loses, and a nation sinks. It's that simple.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Hey.
All right, so boots are on the ground. U.S. troops have arrived in Poland, of all places, amid the Ukraine crisis. And as you well know, even dwarfs started small, as used to be said. U.S. troops arrive in Poland for exercises across Eastern Europe amid Ukraine crisis. Well, that's how we started in Vietnam, with advisors, and now we have about 900 there, soldiers from the 173rd Airborne Brigade Combat Team based in Italy arriving in Poland. You can't tell me this is not going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse. It's nothing about exercises. But what kind of show of force is this? I mean, where are we with all of this? Either you're, what are you doing? You're committing, what, 800 troops to stop Russia? What is Russia going to laugh at this? It's nothing. It means nothing. 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 Zero. Nothing. And in a way, it's not our business, to be honest with you, at the end of the day. That's our business, too. There's no death camps. There's no pogroms by the Russians. That would be another story. If we saw railroad cars, God forbid, going to internment camps, that's another story. No, we don't see that, do we? We don't see that. So let's not make comparisons to the Holocaust. Putin is not Hitler, and he's not a Democrat either. Nor is he a Republican in that regard. Putin is a dictator, but he's not a Hitler. Let's be very clear. Very simple. Let me give you an example of, I'm going to have some calls now on the affirmative action horror stories because it sets the stage for everything else that I want to really talk about today on the program. I don't think we're going to get back to the neo-phallus story that we touched on yesterday or the phalloplasty surgery. I don't think we need to get back to that, although my board op and call screener are sitting there and about to go to sleep. I think they want me to go back to phalloplasty. I will not do it. I think they're bored to death of the affirmative action conversation, but I want to take a few a few callers on this. Chris on WABC in New York, line 9, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, hey, I'm nervous. I wonder all these callers are nervous, and I wonder why they get nervous, but here I am. I want to talk about affirmative action and this recent ruling that happened a day or two ago. Please understand that what state it came out of, it came straight out of Michigan. Okay?
Yes.
What's unique about Michigan is that Michigan has the highest population of Muslims.
In Dearborn, right. Dearborn is a very large community, city of Muslims. So how does that affect what we're talking about?
Of Muslims, the largest population out in the whole world outside of Egypt, right here in good old America.
All right, so what is your point? I don't understand. So what are you saying that has to do with the affirmative action ruling?
My point is, I want to say that I believe most of the Muslims in America, and I know quite a few of them through business dealings, are very intelligent, hardworking people. So in these colleges in Michigan, people will no longer be going in that college on anything other than their intellect. Okay, no
more. Correct. All right, so that's good, isn't it?
That's good. You're going to have a factory. A college is going to become a place where they're going to be spitting out very highly educated, smart people who may...
All right, so this is all to the good. In other words, you're no longer going to be admitted based upon race, religion, sexual orientation. I don't even know the list. But the thing is, now it's going to be based on intellect alone, so we all benefit from that, Chris. That's my point. By the way, I have a Muslim acquaintance who owns a restaurant in San Francisco in North Beach. I was having dinner with him about a year ago in an Italian restaurant. He smiled and he said, he's sort of like a lap. In other words, you know, there's Catholics who are devout and then lapsed Catholics. You've heard about that, right? You know, then there's Orthodox Jews and Jews who go only on the high holy days twice a year, but they don't follow their religion, right? He's a Muslim in that regard. He could care less about their religion. He's an American. So he says to me, Michael, he said, have you ever heard the statement that when Jews fast, Muslims starve? Well, I broke up laughing. I'd never heard that one before. That's a funny joke. What did he mean? He means when Jews have a fast day, the restaurants empty out. So that's what he said. I mean, that's my idea of a lot of fun between religions and races, is when you can make jokes like that. Don't you think that's funny?
I think it's funny, but I think we're missing a larger point. When you talk about religion and you start making old jokes, you have to understand that people who are involved in religion, myself being one of them, I'm a Christian, we take it very, very serious, and it will come a point.
But it wasn't about a religion. It was a Muslim man saying to me, when Jews fast, Muslims starve. Isn't that funny? That has nothing to do with religion. That's a cultural statement.
Well, it has to do with religion because the Jews are fasting due to their religious beliefs. So the Muslim guy's not selling as much of his...
So you don't find that funny?
Okay. I find it...
All right, thanks for the call. I'm gonna have a stroke in a minute. I have no idea what he was saying or why he was saying it. He's going to base it on intellect like that was a bad thing. Then he said, no, it's a good thing. I thought the joke was funny. I didn't make it up. A Muslim man who owns a very fine restaurant in San Francisco said that to me. All right, let's move on. Next topic, next case. Let's go to WFTL in Fort Lauderdale. Doug, welcome to the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Number one, that was funny.
Yeah, I think it's funny. When Jews fast, Muslims starve. That makes everyone feel good. See, my goal would be to see the races come together. My goal would be to see the religions come together. And to me, humor brings everyone together.
Okay, to the point of affirmative action, I was interviewing for medical school at a prestigious medical school in New York City in 1984. I'm a white male. I sat down at the desk. The dean was an African-American dean. He looked me dead in the eyes and asked me how I felt about a black woman getting in before me, even though my grades and my scores were better than hers.
Yeah, well, that was kind of a baited question. How'd you answer it? You can't win with that.
I told him, number one, that was a question he wasn't allowed to ask me.
Oh.
I stood up and I asked him to please remove my name from the list because I wouldn't want to go to a medical school where he was a dean.
Oh, wait a minute. That took a lot of guts. So where did you go?
I actually wound up going to NYU.
But was it a better medical school at the time Was the one you were applying for originally better than NYU or not as good?
As good.
All right, so in other words, you got your medical degree without the racist in as the dean.
That is correct.
All right, so things worked out for you. You had the guts to stick to your principles. Not everybody does, Doug.
Well, you know something? It's not what you say, it's what you do, whether you're a racist or a person who is biased by race. I went to Baton Rouge and helped run the MASH hospital after Katrina. Not a lot of white people I took care of. And then I went to Haiti after the earthquake 3 times. Not a lot of white people I took care of. So, you know, I'm a little tired of people looking at me because I'm a white male doctor and thinking that I'm racist and I'm a millionaire, which is ridiculous.
I wish you were a millionaire. But the thing is, you're not oriented that way. That's not the point. What kind of medicine do you practice, just out of curiosity?
I'm a pediatrician.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, it's blessed work, and you know how I feel about over-medicating children. I don't know where you stand on the doping of our little babies. I'm almost reluctant to get into that with you.
Oh, that would take a few hours.
Doug, thank you for your great work. I appreciate that. You know, if you look at data, you can say, well, statistics don't lie. Most of our life is based upon statistics and mathematics. Your bank account, based on mathematics. Either you have a balance or you don't have a balance. We all know that. The government doesn't know that because to them there's no such thing as a balanced book. They don't have to account for anything. If Obama wants to fly around the world, if the first lady wants to fly around the world at your expense, she doesn't ask, can I afford it? She figures she's the queen, she could do what she wants. And so she does it. And other government officials act in the same manner. But we don't live that way. So you say, well, okay, so what's the point you're making? Everything is based upon data. Everything is based upon statistics. Don't we hear every day the Dow is up, the Dow is down, the stock market gained points, the stock market lost points? In other words, there's a measurement of how things are doing, whether it be the Dow Industrial Average or some other measurement of stock market health or illness. Whether it's a sporting team winning 5-4 or 17-2, again, that's a statistic. So what am I getting at? There's a lot of confusion out there right now in radio about people who are distorting my ratings. You say, well, okay, what does it matter to me? Well, I'll tell you why it matters to you. I want to confirm that you're listening to the winningest show in radio. The show is growing faster than any other show, number one. I only started this in January. Just remember what I just said to you. This is not my first career. This will be my last place in this career, meaning the last stop is here. I'm not going to another syndicator. I'm not going to another set of stations. This is it. And I'm very competitive. I want to be very clear. I'm a super competitive guy. I grew up in a competitive city, in a competitive family. I myself am very competitive. And people try to step on me from day one, and I decided I wasn't going to be stepped on. And if it took me 20 years, I'd get where I wanted to go. I had a very Asian or Chinese philosophy about that. People who know me know what I'm talking about. What am I getting at? I am dominating my number one competitor who said some evil things about me, which I'm not going to repeat. I just swept him in 6 of the top markets, not 4. Look at the data. It's up on michaelsavage.com. New York, a 1-1 to his 0-5. Chicago on WLS. And what's ironic about it, I have a 1-3 share to his 0-2 share. I'm on WLS in a delayed broadcast, and I'm still trouncing him. San Francisco, KSFO, 1-4 to his 0-4. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, he's on a decent station, but they're not listening to him. They heard it all before. Dallas, BAP, a 1-2 to his 0-4. Washington, D.C., the heart of the government, I have a 2.8 share to his 0-5. In Detroit on the great WJR, I have a 2-3 to his 0-6. You say, all right, we heard it all before. Well, you could have heard it all before, but let me tell you something else. Next month, it could be different. My ratings could go down. And he'll be boasting that he's beating me. That's baseball, so to speak. But right now, in the first quarter, I've proven myself. And I've proven that I can still do it. And I intend to still give you the best show I can do every day. Now, having said that, last night, I was interviewed by a streaming radio service about my ratings on the Internet. Apparently, in streaming, my show is number one on the Internet. Now, remember, the bread and butter for this show and what matters to me most are the stations you're listening to me on. If you're listening to me on the internet, good luck, fine, great. But nevertheless, there's a trend going on here. I beat Rush Limbaugh by 7 points with a 20 share. No one's seen a 20 share in radio in, like, forever. No one's seen it. I have a 20 share on streaming digital radio. And the interview was conducted by TalkStream Live. It's rather lengthy, so I can't play much of it. But sometime today, I'll play a portion of the TalkStream Live interview with Tom Donahue so you can get a little feel for some of these incredible questions. If they were boring questions, I wouldn't even run them for you. But the questions were very intelligent, and I wanted you to hear how I responded to them. And now I want to ask you a little funny question. Someone sent this to me. It says, conundrum. The definition of the word conundrum is something that is puzzling or confusing. Here are 6 conundrums of socialism in the United States of America. 1. America is capitalist and greedy, yet half of the population is subsidized. 2. Half of the population is subsidized, yet they think they are victims. 3. They think they are victims, yet their representatives run the government. 4. Their representatives run the government, yet the poor keep getting poorer. 5. The poor keep getting poorer, yet they have things that people in other countries only dream about. 6. They have things that people in other countries only dream about, yet they want America to be more like those other countries. Think about it, and that, my friends, pretty much sums up the USA in the 21st century. It was sent to me from a friend under what is the word conundrum. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
You know, the hour's flying by. I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. I don't know how it works. Some days are faster than others. Today is one of those days, and maybe it's a topic that's been bottled up inside me for so long. The damage that affirmative action has done, not only to me, I mean, I overcame it a long time ago. It's only made me angrier and made me work harder. In a sense, I thank them for affirmative action. But I'm talking about the millions and millions of silenced Americans who have nowhere to go with their pain, with their resentment that's fuming inside of them when they see lowlifes like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson dancing on their souls with their lies every day. When they see the lies coming out of the government on a daily basis, it's enough to make you crazy, which is why there's an undercurrent of rage against the government. One of the biggest problems with the government is overregulation, overtaxation, arrogance, and affirmative action. Affirmative action is a huge part of the resentment that's building in this nation, which is why, again, I think that I've touched on a raw nerve by talking about it. I want you to listen to the following caller, because I can guarantee you this professor has not been able to say this to anyone outside of his own house. Alan on WFTL in Florida. Go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, make my point short. I taught at a South Eastern Florida university, well-known for its liberal politics and stuff like that. I taught a graduate course. Okay, we're talking graduate level. And I'm, as we'll say, in the school of nursing. And twice a year, I would get a phone call from the administration, dean's office, midterm and finals, always asking the same question. Do you have anybody that is black that's failing or close to failing in your class? And invariably, once in a while, I say, yes, I do. And they say, you know the unwritten rule. You cannot give a black person an F. You cannot fail them. You can only give them a D. And that's exactly what happened, because it was explained.
Oh, okay, wait, can you give a Hispanic person an F? Can you give a Chinese person an F?
Hispanic, a Latino, an Asian, it doesn't matter.
Ah.
Only if they were African-American.
In animal farms, some animals are more equal than others. Have you been able to tell this story publicly before, Alan?
No, I've only told it to people that were in the inner circle.
That's right, because you were afraid of the repercussions if you ever told this story. And I am providing a safety valve for the truth to come out like hot steam. Thank you, Alan. The steam is under the surface. The country's like a volcano about to blow because of affirmative action and the arrogance of this administration.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
And you see how the chef is mixing the dressing. I mean, dressing is supposed to be an enhancement. It's not supposed to be the meal. You know,
exactly.
So you're not really supposed to have, like, extra dressing at the bottom of your... That means you've had too much dressing, and it also makes the vegetables, it wilts them. And it takes all the excitement out of it. So you'll notice that when you get professional salads out at a restaurant, one of the reasons why they taste so good is that they don't overdress it.
The world is in flames. The Middle East is in flames. Russia's on the move. And the First Lady, after her junket to China, is talking about how to make a salad dressing. I'm going to do a jump cut from that to the fact that we've been talking about affirmative action with no implications implied whatsoever. And I'm going to quote from William Shakespeare's Hamlet, which I learned in high school, by the way. I don't think they still teach him. I think they teach rap music as an American cultural phenomenon. But one of the great soliloquies is to be and not to be. And I'm going to read it for a reason. It's from Hamlet. It's very short. It's worth listening to. And pardon my mangling of the English language. It's the best I can do as an immigrant son. I can't read it in the proper English manner that you might be accustomed to. But I'll do the best I can. To be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache, and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to, that's a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep perchance to dream, there's the rub, for in that sleep of death what dreams may come. When we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time? The oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make. With a bare bodkin, who would these fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus conscience does make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pitch and moment, with this regard their currents turn awry, and lose the name of action. Soft you now, the fair Ophelia, nymph in all thy horizons, be all my sins remembered. There are a few phrases within that that you've probably heard over the course of your life, and you didn't know where they came from. But one of them that keeps coming back to me is this one, and it has to do with government, where he says, who would put up with this? Who would bear the whips and scorns of time? Are you ready for this? And the insolence of office, the law's delay. The insolence of office is the line that comes screaming off the page at me. Is that not what we're talking about? The insolence of this government? You say, well, okay, so what's your point? In one sense, what I'm saying to you is officials have been insolent from the beginning of civilization. And whether it been a sheriff in his time, or a bureaucrat in his time, or a government bureaucrat in our time. The insolence of office, there's nothing new to it. The law's delay. The law's delay. How many of us are still waiting to collect a dime from thieves who've robbed us? We win in court, and then the thief then appeals it to the next court. The thief then appeals it to the next court. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about, because I'm living through the law's delay right now. But I'm not ready to take a mere bodkin and put it into my eyeball. See, a bodkin was a sewing needle. And what Shakespeare is arguing is that what keeps us going is the fear that something after death is worse than life itself. Who else would bear this? If we really knew there was a heaven waiting for us, right? I mean, how many of us would go along with the misery in our life? Unless, of course, you're of a certain faith which believes you get to rape virgins in the next world. Sorry. I never heard of anything like that. I never heard of a religion based upon raping virgins in another world. But okay, to each his own. To each his own. If I ever went into a house of worship and they promised me that when I died, I got 32 virgins to rape, I'd run out screaming and call the FBI. But all right, to each his own. Everyone has their way of believing in things. Common phrases. Common phrases. With a bear, Bodkin, who would endure this but for hope of something after death? The phone number is pointless to give you because we're out of space and time on the Savage Nation, especially space on the call screening board. There's no room for it. And since I've had the one piece of chocolate, I'm going to eat it in the year 2014, 10 minutes ago. I could stay on the radio now for 12 hours. I love chocolate. I never eat it. I just love it. No, we're getting Sherry's Berries back. And believe me, that people were screaming about that one. They never tasted anything like that. I had a few left in the refrigerator. I just had one. We're going to continue to talk about the insolence of affirmative action. But there are other topics. And one of the craziest topics is John McCain going on television. This lunatic doesn't seem to get away from the spotlight of the microphone for very long, does he? He goes on to some late night show, another comedian show, because no one else would let this lunatic through their front door. And listen to this nut in clip 16.
I'd be giving them some weapons with which to defend themselves. I would be taking other measures, such as giving them money that they need to get their economy back on,
money.
On track. We should be saying that if they want to, they can be members of the European Union. There's so many steps. We're the strongest, most powerful, and best nation in the world. And we can...
shut up, you dumb donkey, you. You
so
talk about
he,
a... I know, I can't even hear the voice anymore. This man is an embarrassment to the word politician. We can give them money. You hear the Ukrainians, we can give them money. Where does the money come from? Just print more of it for the Ukrainians now? If they want to be members of the European Union, that's exactly why Russia decided to move troops to the border of the Ukraine, because warmongers like you, Johnny McCain, have threatened Russia. Why? Because if the Ukraine becomes a member of the EU, and then they become a member of NATO, you can put troops on the border of Russia, and Russia's just not going to put up with that any more than we would put up with, let us say, Russia putting troops on the border of Mexico. What do you think we would do if we woke up and Russia was saying, we're doing a trade deal with Mexico, we're moving troops into Mexico, we're going to move troops to the border with the United States? How would you feel about that? That's exactly Putin's point of view. And unless you can see it from the point of view of Putin, you don't understand this at all. That's another topic, in addition to Michelle Obama explaining how to make salad dressing. Then yesterday, we had a really great sound day with Jeb Bush, bushing amnesty. Once again, as I said to you, we had 16 years of the Bush dynasty running this country. Some good, some bad, some indifferent. But we've had 16 years of the Bush dynasty. Do you want to make it an even 24 years now? Is that what you want? Do you want to make 24 years of the Bush dynasty running this country any more than you want to make it 16 years of the Clinton dynasty? We had 8 years of the Clintons. Do you want another 8 years of the Clintons? I mean, what can you expect that you haven't already gotten from the Clinton dynasty? Tell me what's going to be different this time. Has the leopard changed her spots? Has Hillary changed in any way from the time she was co-president? No. You know what you're going to get with Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton. We had 8 years of it. Isn't it time for somebody new? See, now this would be a campaign speech I would give if I were running. I would go right after the opposition in that way. I wouldn't say that they're bad people, but I'd say the Bush family had already 16 years. I don't think we want to make it 24. The Clintons had 8 years. This is a new age, a new time, and it's time for a new person in the White House, and that person is me. But I'm not running for anything. And the Republicans certainly wouldn't know how to do that because that's a little too real for them. Listen to Jeb Bush in clip number 20 pushing for amnesty for illegal aliens. Listen.
We need to fix our broken immigration system and rebuild one that is true to our immigrant heritage and economically driven. That would include a serious effort to protect our borders, of course,
effort.
Enforce our laws, and sanction companies that knowingly hire undocumented workers.
Okay, we heard all of this before. They're supposed to be doing that now. What's new about that, Jeb? I mean, that's the law of the land. So, well, what are you talking about that we don't already know? But if you listen to clip 21, you realize he's just in the hands of of Mr. Faceberg. Faceberg, who's one of the richest young men on earth. Is his name Martin, his first name? I don't even know what his first name is. Martin Zuckerberg. Martin. I'll call him Martin for sake of convenience. Martin Zuckerface has more money than any man on earth should ever have. And yet Mark Zuckerface is concerned about illegal aliens becoming citizens. Do you think he really cares about illegal aliens? Do you think that Mark Zuckerface cares about illegal aliens or that he really wants H-1B visas so he can get cheaper workers? Listen to clip 21 now.
It would include a robust guest worker program, the expansion of economic visas like H-1B visas, the elimination of country quotas, and creating a tough but fair path to legalized status for the millions that live in the shadows today. It is not an American value to have 12
American. All right, we heard. Thank you very much, Mr. Boone. So it would include the expansion of H-1B visas. Now, H-1B visas, as I told you yesterday, are designed specifically for technical workers and other workers that we deem to be required by, in the workforce that we seem to not be able to get here. But in fact, you can get American workers to work in the computer industry or the tech industry. You just have to pay them a fair salary. And what Zuckerface and his front men like Bush want is cheaper labor. It's that simple. There's nothing new under the sun. That's all. I need to say it until you finally get it. Because if we listen to these people, they could break the nation and lead us into 100 years of darkness. If we listen to the oligarchy, they are liable to lead us into 100 years of darkness. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. 855-400-7282. Let's go to the callers. WMAL in Washington, D.C. Apparently, there's a lot of people listening to this show in Washington now with an enormous share of the radio listeners listening to this program. Tom on WMAL, thanks for calling. What's your point today?
In the early to mid-80s, I went to an information session about getting into law school at a local university. One of the questions that was asked was, what's the minimum LSAT scores required to get in? And the answer was, if you were white, it was 40. If you were Asian, it was 30. If you were African-American, it was 20.
No comment. I guess we can't even comment on that statement, but that's a fact according to you.
Yeah.
You needed a higher LSAT score if you were of European American.
I needed double.
Oh, what? You're being punished for being a descendant of a European, I suppose.
Right.
So did you get into law school?
I actually went off in a different direction.
You know what? They did you a favor. At the end of the day, they did you a favor. Most lawyers have not very happy lives, Tom.
Right.
Of course, I don't know anyone else who has a happy life, but we limit it to that. All right, but you made your point. 40, 30, 20. That's the formula that he had to face. That's a little example of affirmative actions racism. Let's go to KKAT in Utah. Michael has a comment to make about Ms. Sotomayor's arguments against the ruling. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
The very argument that people are proposing, that the proposed people that say that they protect African Americans and Hispanics, is at its core racist. You know, to say that the only job that someone of Hispanic descent can do are those of a common laborer, or the only way that an African American can get into a good school is if we lower the standard, or the only way that they can make it in life is to receive government assistance, is racist. You know, because we believe that they're every bit as smart, every bit as capable as a white person, you know, all of a sudden we're now labeled as the racist.
Yes, it's Alice in Wonderland, it's Animal Farm, it's everything we were warned about by very liberal writers in past decades. That's come to pass now under the goons who disguise themselves as social justice engineers. Thanks for the call. This just came in. Egypt leader, the leader of Egypt, who is a general, who threw out the Muslim Brotherhood, says that U.S. aid is now needed to fight jihadists who know only destruction. The head of Egypt's military, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the Egyptian military commander, expected to win the upcoming presidential election, issued a request and a warning to the United States. He said, reinstate the military aid his nation needs to fight Muslim extremists because, quote, Osama bin Laden was only the first of the jihadist leaders who only understand destruction. You do know that your good friend Obama pulled military aid from Mr. Al-Sisi in order to make certain that the world is safe for the Muslim Brotherhood. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Hey, welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We have a very, very short amount of time left in this segment. Jimmy, on KSFO in San Francisco, fire away. You're on the radio. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I wanted to ask you, we were talking about the economics of open borders, and I definitely agree with you and understand where you're coming from on that. As far as culturally, I wanted to bring up the idea that philosophically it seems like it's an issue of the structure of governance in the first place that creates the threat from culture, because
I don't quite know what you're saying, Jimmy. Are you in favor of open borders? Is that what you're arguing?
Well, I'm saying philosophically that the problem of the culture being affected by having an open border situation would be because these people would be lobbying to use government to, have more socialized systems and things like that.
I don't think you understand that Mexico is a corrupt socialist nation. Do you understand that?
Oh, yes, definitely.
All right, so why would you want to flood America with 30 million people whose culture is alien to our culture? I don't understand it.
Well, that's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm just bringing up is the fact is that the concern and the fear is based that these people will then want to use government to create a more socialized system here.
Well, of course they will. But they were already trying to use the government to hijack the nation for themselves. Look at La Raza. La Raza unto itself means the race. Can you imagine a Caucasian organization called the race that focused solely on lobbying for people of European descent? Can you imagine what would happen if such an organization existed? It would be called the Ku Klux Klan, wouldn't it?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
It is Rock and Roll Wednesday on the Savage Nation. Is it Wednesday? Is it Wednesday? Yeah, it is. It's flying by. This is the turning point of the week, the fulcrum of the week. I know I can get through it. Tuesday, you wish you were dead. I mean, Tuesday's a tough day. It's a very rough day. Monday, all right, you figure you were off a couple of days. But by Monday, you get through it. But Tuesday, say, I can't do it anymore. Some days it's like that. I wasn't like because I was away last week. It didn't. But the jet lag is awful for me. Just terrible. I hate flying. Now, you know, I hear the new law in Georgia now. Did you hear about the new law in Georgia? Guns everywhere, now the law in Georgia. A new law allows concealed guns in bars, churches, school zones, government buildings, and certain parts of airports. Georgia on my mind. How'd that happen in Georgia? How did that happen? Georgia law allows guns in some schools, bars, and churches. Boy, that should have gunophobes terrified. House Bill 60, or the Safe Carry Protection Act of 2014, which opponents have nicknamed the Guns Everywhere Bill. My God. Don't call on the gun issue because it's a death. It's like the third rail of radio guns. That's beginners in radio want to get gun callers. You know, we could argue over this until the cows come home. I've heard it all. I've read John Lott's stuff, you know. Let's go to the callers. WMAL in Washington, D.C. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
You're a real Renaissance man. Now, you were talking about Hamlet, and then you mentioned something about a conundrum, and it reminded me of a humorist that brought us through the Great Depression named Will Rogers.
I grew up after him, but I used to watch him on tape where he'd spin the lariat, and just spin it and talk quietly. Is that how you mean?
Yeah. I got a little blurb about him that... He died in 1935 in a plane crash. Incidentally, a contemporary of his was the great Newt Rockne, who died in a plane crash 4 years before him. But he used to say things like you were saying, that Americans are better off than the socialists of Europe, but yet they want to be more like the Europeans.
Yeah,
that's part of the conundrum that you mentioned.
Yes.
But Will Rogers would say something like, you know, this is the only country in history where you went to the poorhouse in your car. And
that's true.
He had all
well, that's right. I mean, someone sent me this, the conundrum. America is capitalist and greedy, yet half the population is subsidized.
Yep.
Half the population is subsidized, yet they think they're victims. They think they are victims, yet their representatives run the government. Their representatives run the government, yet the poor keep getting poorer. The poor keep getting poorer, yet they have things that people in other countries only dream about. They have things that people in other countries only dream about, yet they want America to be more like those other countries. That's what someone sent to me as a conundrum. What I'd like to do for you now is begin a little bit of a recording that we did last night. How long we'll run it, I don't know yet. But, Eric, if we could get ready with an interview that I did last night with Tom Donahue of TalkStream Live, because he said nobody's seen a 20 share in radio in like Foreverland. You beat Rush by 7 points. You're definitely at the peak of your career right now. I said, I hope not, because there's quite a few years to go. I want you to listen to part one for a few minutes of clip number 14 on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much for joining us on TSL Talks and Tom Donahue Reports today.
Well, as you know, I'm glad to be here, and I hope that I can attract an even larger audience. Where shall we begin?
Well, let's talk about, you must be savoring your significant streaming talk radio success. Moreover, your major market talk radio successes of late in your new drive time spot.
Well, of course I am. I've never had drive time on the East Coast, and I've never had major stations. As you know, I shifted syndicators after a lengthy legal battle. I finally was able to free myself, as I should have years ago, and luckily Cumulus was quick to sign me. I'm very happy to be with them because I have the best stations in the country. And, you know, in the first month on the big cumulative stations, WABC, WLS, KSFO, mm-hmm. WBAP,
mm-hmm.
WJR, naturally, Hannity had not had any competition in this time slot. And I have to mention Sean because he is my competition, and he had some very evil things to say about me in the lead up to this, things that were completely out of the ken of competition. They were outright slanderous, in my opinion. And he's 20 years younger than me, and let me tell you something. I beat him to a pulp in all the major markets. And the reason is because he's been doing the same show for years, using his radio show to promote his television show, and everybody knew it. People are not dumb, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's put him aside.
You have to be savoring this. This is a real watershed moment. I mean, you're at the pinnacle of your success, and you're not a young man, although you come across as a young man on the airwaves.
No, well, you know, I'm young at heart with a lot of energy.
That's right.
The issue is, it's working. And why is it working? Because I have tremendous drive, passion, however you want to put it today, for the subjects at hand. I have a very versatile background with a very, I think, distinguished education. I think those elements add to an audience. Audience wants to hear more than just Democrats bad, Republicans good. How much can you hear of the same crap day in and day out without turning the radio off? I mean, if I turn another show on and I hear them going on with the same show I heard before, I turn it right off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what, beyond that, what makes your show distinctive? What makes yours stand out? Because it obviously does. It resonates with a huge audience.
I would think it's the versatility of subject matter. My ability to change on a dime. I could be talking about affirmative action today, as I did, because of the Supreme Court ruling about,
mm-hmm.
What came down. It's a major story, which, by the way, I'll give you an example. No one was covering it. It wasn't on the news shows. It's the biggest news, not only of the day, the week, the month, maybe of the year. It's going to affect people's lives for years to come. And they were stuck with what they planned yesterday.
So you can pivot in any moment because you're so spontaneous.
I can pivot because I have a tremendous background of knowledge in these fields. I've been at it for
mm-hmm.
20 years, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I also have deeply invested myself in certain subjects that mean a lot to me. I enjoy radio. I think the most important thing to remember is this is all I do. I have no side jobs. There's no other job, no other career, no other profession.
Well, how about authors? Distinguished author of how many books? Almost 30?
Yes, almost 30. I mean, the last...
That's a lot of work. Many people say it's it might be the hardest chore of all is to write a book.
The next one that's coming out, and it will be my last nonfiction of its type, is in October. It's called How to Stop the Coming Civil War. And believe me, this title is so controversial, the publisher has been fighting with me over it for months. They're afraid of the title, but I said, there's no other way to say it. The government is pushing us there, but what happened 2 weeks ago in the Nevada desert, she finally called me and said, my God, you were right. She said, that's the beginning of our Boston Tea Party. I said, yes, you're right. I'm telling you, I know this has been brewing, and I hope it doesn't get any worse. They, you know, you call it a prairie fire. The liberals used to call it prairie fire when they were trying to excite the masses. Well, the masses are excited, only it's on the other side of the aisle. And the media is certainly not with the people. The media is with the power structure. Talk radio, you know, it's funny, something today, Tom, on the radio,
mm-hmm.
I was talking about affirmative action horror stories mm-hmm. and how happy I was that the Supreme Court finally ruled on this. I said, you know, you may not like my opinion, I said to my audience, but I'm not the government. You can't call Obama and complain to him. You can't call your local senator and complain to her. I said, you can complain to me and argue with me. Here's my phone number. I said, talk radio is the last vestige of honesty and truth in the whole country. It's mm-hmm. the last vestige of democracy in the media. Nobody else will take your calls. I will. Now, that's a powerful statement. It's true as well. Can you call Obama and say, I don't like your policies? Can you call and say, can you tell Michelle to stop spending so much money on her trips? No, you can't do that.
You know, Michael, your talk show skills and talents, you know, are so ingrained in you that pretty much conducting a talk show right now. And I have a lot of respect for you because I think you're the best at what you do. But I want to get back more to you. And I want to focus more on your successes, various questions that I have for you.
Go back to the significant success for 1 minute. In January, I beat Hannity on these stations. I said, he said, oh, his spokesperson said it's not a sprint, it's a long distance race, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I beat him in February. Okay, what's he going to say then? It's another fluke? Well, we just got the March ratings. I beat him again.
In March as well.
Yeah, I just, but
continue
I beat him
March
bigger.
On.
New York 1-1 to a 0-5. Chicago LS a 1-3 to his 0-2.
Wow.
San Francisco 1-4 on KSFO to his 0.4. 0-4. So on BAT, I have a 1-2 to his 0.4. But listen to this one. Washington, D.C. on the powerhouse WMAL. I have a 2.8 share in Washington, D.C. to Hannity 0.5.
Wow.
Finally, WJR Detroit, I have a 2.3 to his 0.6. So it's now a trend. It's no longer numbers like 2.8 after a few months in Washington. It means more than just hardcore conservatives are listening to me. It means there's a much wider audience for what I'm putting out there.
Now, that's three wins to zero for Hannity. And you're the first host that has really challenged Hannity in all the years he's been in that drive time, you know, 3 p.m. Eastern slot. And you have successfully dismantled him, and you have won in all the major markets. There are some markets that perhaps you're not hurting yet, but I think that's going to change pretty quickly with the significant margins of victory that you have accomplished.
Look, the affiliation department is going to have to go to the stations that are wed to Hannity and say, look, this is the trend. You want to bet on a winner or a loser? But it's not only about Hannity. It's way past him. You know, he's not a bad guy. He's just desperate. They moved him into Siberia on television, and then they moved him into Siberia on radio. So he lashed out at me. Nevertheless, here I am, and I hope it keeps up.
Your challenges from Levin, who also works for Cumulus, and you guys have traded many barbs. To this day, I think he still rallies around Sean and Rush, and it almost seems to me that the credence of your conservative independence, because so many hosts say, oh, I'm an independent. When you see that this pack, this clan of conservatives continue to attack you and to basically, you're kind of a man in estrangement.
It doesn't matter what they say, as they used to say, look, if they're going to attack me, why don't tell people about their credibility? I ran the Paul Revere Society before, even though who Paul Revere was. 20 years ago, I was fighting these battles before they were on the radio. So for them to attack me tells people more about them than it does about me. But more than that, yes, there's a clan. Yes, there's a cartel. Yes, there's a clique. They're like a bunch of high school kids ganging up on a girl they don't like because she's better looking.
You know, I had some thoughts here. You wrote a book, and I didn't have an opportunity to read it, but I've heard you quote from it often, and I think it might be one of your better books, and that's The Political Zoo. Have you ever thought of a book perhaps dealing specifically with media, not just in part, maybe calling it The Media Stew?
I don't know. I think you should write that one. But having said all of that, I am an independent conservative because in that book, The Political Zoo, I skewered not only liberal politicians but many conservatives or Republicans, including people in the media who are supposedly conservative. You know, again, let's look at what we're dealing with today, Tom. Your site, your aggregate site of people listening to me on, you know, internet radio was a very large sample of over 800,000 people.
And yeah, and that's solid listening sessions. There's more people that listen, but we picked and Bill Fries, I'd have to say, the president and also the owner of TalkStream Live that includes the website, the apps, you know, click to listen, all kinds of social radio.
Well, I beat Rush by 7 points, which is astounding. Now, here's the king. He's good at what he does, but he's been doing the same show for years. And I think that explains the change. I don't really know. Next month it could change again. You know that. And the people are fickle. Listeners are fickle.
Savage. Well, I'm back live. I wanted to just share that interview with you. There's another big part of it that will play tomorrow, perhaps. I thought the questions were quite insightful. And I thought it would give you a little better view of how I see, you know, my role in talk radio and talk radio in general. If you want to take off from that interview now and move it away from affirmative action or the news of the day, we can do that. We're going to stick to affirmative action for a while when I come back. But if you'd like to now call in with some comments or questions about the interview I just gave, again, the phone number is 855-400-7282. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Here's the Savage Nation. I'm going to shift gears now. I'm going to do one of my versatile turning on a dime numbers. We're going to go from politics to fiction. I want to read you a story I wrote. It's a page long, published a couple of years ago in my book, Psychological Nudity, and it's called Love by the Sewer Plant, and it's a page long. Little nostalgia. Shall I tell you the story of Love by the Sewer Plant? Huh? Remember the song, I Only Have Eyes for You, sung by the Flamingos? We're talking about Route 42. We're talking 1956, 57. We're talking a sewer plant. We're talking about Love by the Sewer Plant, first Love by the Sewer Plant. Now, this girl was so beautiful that people stopped as she went by to marvel at her. We were at a small hotel owned by a former boxer, a pugilist, a real tough guy. If he got into an argument with anyone who worked for him and they got smart, he beat them up and threw them off the property. That type of guy. Everyone was afraid of him. An old school New York Jewish kind of street fighter type. So he ruled his little hotel with an iron fist. Because he was tough, things ran right. Nothing ever went wrong. No one robbed cutlery. No one talked back. So anyway, I'm a kid, 15 years old, and boom, it's Love by the Sewer Plant. She and I walked across the road to walk down to the Neversink River to make out. The water was so cold that when you waded across it, your feet turned blue. My uncle had a new Plymouth Fury, so I remember the time. The girl was so stunningly gorgeous, just really beautiful. And the theater companies would come through. They had entertainment in these little hotels, in small little theaters that they called casinos, for a night of entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a comedian who was terrible, a juggler, or a balloon man doing cheap acts. In other words, schlocky entertainment. Nevertheless, the people who were the entertainers thought that they were artists. You've got to understand that. Even though they were schlocky entertainers, let's say they could paint velvet paintings, they were still painters. In their minds, they were Van Goghs. They were theatrical and everyone else was boring. In other words, they were the artists. They understood beauty. So one day, a group of these entertainers came around and just stared at this girl. They came running up to her as if I wasn't there. I was holding her hand and we were walking together. We were just kids. One of them said, man, I want you to see this girl. This is the girl I was telling you about. They looked at her like she was a specimen of biblical beauty. Now, where are you going to go when you're a kid and you've got nowhere to go? So we took a walk down the hill. It was a long slope down to the river where there was a sewer treatment plant, which occasionally, as you well know, doesn't smell that good. Kids don't care, though. They can override anything, particularly when the lust hits them. So we two kids walked down the hill, crossed the river, roll up the dungarees, take off our shoes. Our legs were blue, and we have a little moment of passion together. It was my first moment of passion, and not exactly on the level of a complete moment of passion. But for me, it was the first of that type. That's Love by the Sewer Plant.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is 6 minutes after the hour. Have you had enough politics yet? I mean, you can get politics on Fox, CNN, General Electric Television. There's only so much I can talk about with regard to the dangers and damage that affirmative action has done, and many of you are still calling on it because it's a very big sore point. So at the end of the hour, I did a little change of pace, and I read from one of my earlier books, Psychological Nudity, which isn't even available anymore, or Love by the Sewer Plant, about a time when I was a teenager, that's all. Just because, you know, radio, it's all radio's personality-driven. The news you can get anywhere. You can read it in the newspaper, online, whatever. But you know my politics. You know my political orientation. And so what is this about? What is radio really about? It's personality-driven. You want to know more about the host. You want more disclosure. You want to feel that you're part of my life. I know what it's, you know, trust me, I understand talk radio as well, if not better than anybody. It's as simple as that. So that's why I shifted to Love by the Sewer Plant. I don't know that I'm going to stick with that for a while, but we could do anything you want, whether it's that, Woodchuck Bill, Fat Al's Tuna, Happy and Sad Cufflinks, Tough High School Geometry Teacher, Symphony Sid's Story, Growing Up in the Age of Radio, or The Fly and the Tuna, or I could do politics. I mean, either one is just as good for me. If there's any new story on the Neo-Phallus, I will talk about that. Let's begin on WJR in Detroit. Sharon, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. I love by the Sewer. It reminds me of me and Dennis. Dennis Israel, your presenter. He and I are old friends.
Whoa, wait. Who's Dennis Israel?
He's the guy that announces you. He says, you know, and now the Savage Nation.
How do you know his name is Dennis Israel? I never met him.
Oh, well.
Well, wait. Now, this is starting to sound a little psycho here. The guy who makes the announcement, to my show was your boyfriend when you were a kid?
Yes.
Well, come on. How do you know his name is Dennis Israel? I never met him.
Oh, he's a powerhouse in radio going back to Reagan. Oh, my God, yes.
Okay, well, maybe you know something I don't know. So how was it that time by the sewer plant?
That was the days before all the political baloney. I mean, those were wonderful days, and I love you.
Yeah, but you know what? There was politics going on at that time. You were just a kid, and you paid no attention to them. The way kids today don't pay any attention. The kids today are the same as you and I were. They don't care about politics.
Yeah, I know.
So, anyway, enjoy the show. Whatever. I don't know how children are going to wind up being able to talk even. When I see housekeepers walking around with babies in carriages where I live, and the housekeepers are running around with phones, they don't look at the baby. The baby's laying in the crib looking up at, like an astronomer looking up at the universe. The baby's staring up at the heavens, and the housekeeper or the mother's marching around with a cell phone. Baba 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 boo ba bee ba ba doesn't shut the mouth for 1 second. The baby could be turning blue. Baba da doo ba bee ba 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 boo ba boo ba 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 boo ba bee ba ba. And they're always walking in the street, not on the sidewalk. What's that about? Baba ba boo ba bee ba ba. And the baby, why don't you give the baby a little cell phone in the carriage so it can talk to something? Yeah, text the baby. Help, I'm turning blue. Maybe the baby can text, please, turning blue. You know what I'm saying? All right, what else is in the news? There's so much news stories. You can go crazy from it. Russian, British, America, you Dutch scrambled jets. I didn't know the Dutch could fly. I had no idea with all of the porno over there. How could they even scramble a jet after Russian bombers approach? They're fearing Russia now? Why would the Dutch fear Russia? The Dutch Defense Department says several NATO member countries scrambled jets Wednesday afternoon after a pair of Russian bomber planes approached their airspace over the North Sea. The Dutch ministry identified the planes as two Russian Tu-95 Bears and said it launched two F-16s from Volkel Air Force Base to intercept them. All right, and then what? They scrambled the jets. They would have been better off scrambling the eggs and going for a break. For as good as that did. All right, I'm glad they have a jet that they can scramble. God, I hope this stops already. I hope that the warmongers are just laughed out of the park, but I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. What would you like to talk about in the Savage Nation? We can still do affirmative action. Many of you are still calling with your horror stories. I'd like to move on, frankly. And let's go to WJR. Mike is going to talk about the ranch thing. The ranch story is the big story. The undercurrent of our rebellion in this country seems to have been triggered by Harry Reid's, let us say, overreach with regard to vast swaths of the desert. And I don't think Harry Reid cares that much about chaparral, frankly. Mike on WJR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, yeah, Mike, I think they got me from another day. I was going to talk to you about the 10 million man march that you were referencing yesterday that said we need to have. And I just need to let you know that that's actually going to occur on May the 16th. And there's a couple
where,
of...
Where is this going to happen, May 16th? Where?
On the Mall in Washington, D.C.
Now, what is the title of the march?
The title of the march is Operation American Spring.
Oh, boy. And who's involved thus far? Who's involved thus far? Are the Tea Party groups deeply in? Are the Tea Party groups involved? I hope
they're grassroots people. Colonel Harry Reilly is asking for people from all walks of life. He's pleading with people like you to have the resources, national voices.
Well, what is it that he? Okay, so let's start with this. What is the American Spring March, May 16th, going to be about? What are they protesting?
There's three phases. They're hoping to assemble up to or more than 10 million people who are to assemble peacefully and nonviolently to literally ask for the resignation of those who have our government captive. And they're going to ask the president.
All right. Well, look, what can I say? You're going to ask for Obama to resign? I mean, good luck with that one. Why would he resign from such a cushy job? Why would you resign from a job where you don't work and you get all the power in the whole world? Why would you resign from that? I mean, that's not how it worked. I mean, people like that, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. I don't see this man resigning at all. If you want to aim your wrath at someone, aim it at Eric Holder. Eric Holder's committed enough offenses to be asked to resign. I don't think he's going to resign, do you? Instead, he ups the stakes. He announces a clemency overhaul, allowing the release of millions of people out of the prisons, or hundreds of thousands. You know it's strictly a political move, which is not to argue that everybody in prison belongs in prison for as long as they've been in prison. The U.S. Justice Department announced yesterday will expand the number of people eligible for clemency, and the new guidelines will allow certain prisoners who have already served at least 10 years behind bars to apply for release. You say, all right, well, 10 years is a long time, but what was the crime? That's what I want to know. What was the crime? What, murder one, you can get out after 10 years now? See, here's the problem. They're saying the requirements are that inmates must have served at least 10 years of their federal sentence and not have a significant criminal history. They must be nonviolent low-level offenders, no significant ties to major gangs, have a record of good conduct in prison, have no history of violence. It sounds good on paper. But you and I both know that once you create a program like this, some very bad actors, to use a government phrase, are going to get a shyster lawyer who's going to slip them in, right? And they're going to wind up being released. This is how it's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. Of course, you say, well, the process will be open to those who likely would have gotten a lesser sentence if convicted of the same offense today. That would be fair. I understand that. I mean, not everything that Obama does is wrong. Almost everything he does is wrong. But even a stop clock is right twice a day. So in this sense, they're not 100% wrong, by the way. Because the sentencing system today is different than the sentencing system many years ago, and many people are in prison for minor drug offenses. At least that's what they would like you to believe. But it often isn't that case, by the way. They were in for a minor drug offense, which followed a burglary, which followed a larceny, which followed, let's say a beating of some kind. Then say, oh, well, he's only in for having a little minor drug offense. But usually it was something in a long line of offenses, incidentally. So we're going to have a lot of felons on the streets all of a sudden. And tell me how that's going to work out for the society. You think they're ready to go back into society? Who's going to take care of them? The Justice Department has identified more than 23,000 people are serving sentences for at least 10 years. All right, so now they're going to release 23,000 people. Good. Now what's going to happen? What are we going to do with 23,000 people released onto the streets? Maybe some of them should be released. But why is Obama doing this now? Do you think he cares about them? Or do you think it's because, as someone said yesterday, these 20-some-odd thousand prisoners all have families? So if you add it up, 20,000 times what, 3, 4, is 60 to 100,000 people directly involved in the clemency, and these are people who generally wouldn't vote, and he figures these 100,000 people will go out and make the difference in swing elections, and this is a way to motivate people in an unpresidential year, probably. It's all politics. It's, again, pandering to people in order to get them to vote. I guess there's nothing new under the sun. 855-400-7282. Let's change the topics to any other topic. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. It is 222 on the West Coast and 522 on the East Coast. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. And I'm going to go to the callers. We're talking today about the inmate release that out of the blue Obama has, now that he's messed up the Arab Crescent and messed up relations with Russia. He's on his way to Asia to see if he can muck up our relations with China and Japan and Korea. And his henchman here at home, Holder, is announcing he's going to release 23,000 inmates into the streets. See, it gets better by the day under Obama. Without them, there'd be no need for talk radio. How do you feel about the inmate release? Don on WABC, welcome to the program. Good or bad? Are you for or against the inmate release?
I'm absolutely against it.
All right. Why?
Mike, because it's going to be like Arkham Asylum. It's going to be like Gotham City. This president is out of control.
So you fear that although we are being sold a bill of goods, that the clemency is to make the sentencing guidelines conform with those of today, you're afraid that the felons who are going to be released are going to cause havoc in the streets, in plain English?
Well, you might have some reformed, but you're going to have others that haven't been reformed.
Well, of course, that's right. Maybe they, maybe they'll reform. Maybe they can't be reformed. That's the question. I mean, clemency sounds a good idea for those who are, you know, over, let's say, put in jail for too long a period of time. But the fact of the matter is, do we really want 23,000 felons released into the street? Who can unite the United States of America? Which candidate can unite this divided nation? Who can unite this country? Which of the candidates can unite America? Hillary Clinton can't. She will divide America even further. There's no question she has a meanness to her that will incite rage in fully half the population. So she can't be the one. Who do you think would be the greatest uniter amongst all of the potential candidates? I would put an X through Bush. Bush again? I said we had 8 years of the first Bush, 8 years of the second, 16 years of the Bush clan, God bless them, is enough for any one family to run the country. Wouldn't you say 16 years is enough? And the last Bush was not a uniter, not a bad man, but when he invented the weapons of mass destruction, he turned a good portion of the American people against him and the Republican Party, and look what we had. We got Frankenstein as a result. People were so angered by Bush and his WMD and the wars that were based on a false premise that they gave us Obama. Obama ran as an anti-war president. Look what he's done. No matter what they run, they're going to do something else. The first act that Obama engaged in, one of the first, was to send 30,000 new troops to Afghanistan. I said, okay, the handwriting is on the wall. And then instead of being a humble man, he turned out to be an arrogant man. Instead of him and the first lady being frugal, they turned out to be as spenders like a pharaoh. Like a pharaoh took over the country. No limit to what they'll do. Parties, travel, expenses, 70 aides, no end to it. So everything that you thought you were going to get from Obama, you didn't get. So who could unite the country at a time like this with such incendiary situations such as the Bundy Ranch standoff, which was triggered by a group of jackbooted thugs who could have done this legally? They didn't have to go there with loaded automatic weapons and scopes on women and children. They could have done this in a much more peaceful manner. So who is going to de-escalate the hatred in this country? Is there a candidate out there who can de-escalate the hatred in this country? I don't think it's Hillary. I don't think it's Bush. So who's left? Cruz? Where is he? I haven't seen him for a while. Who's left? I don't even know who's running. Is there anybody left? I don't even know who else is running, truthfully. Nobody even has a national name. Maybe that guy, the doctor, Dr. Ben Carson. He's a brilliant man. And maybe he is the uniter after Obama. Maybe Ben Carson is the man who could be president. The man is a certifiable great man. We have another minute left, don't we? Yeah, you're running ahead of your time, lest my clock's off. Yeah, I have a whole full minute, so you can kill the music. I'm not ready for it. You're ready to cut me off. No, you know, Ben Carson, they're trying to sneer at him, the morons in the media, the uneducated potheads in the media, making nothing of him simply because he's a conservative. Suddenly the minorities in the media are attacking him because he's a conservative minority, and they don't like that. But Ben Carson is a good candidate. The man is a certifiably fine doctor, went to a great university based on his brains, not upon his race, and got through one of the most difficult pediatrics programs known to the medical profession. He's a certifiably fine doctor, scientist, and fine American. Maybe he could unite the country. None of the others, in my opinion, could unite the country after Frankenstein leaves. That's assuming Frankenstein leaves. We're not so sure about that. There's three more years of the Frankensteinian regime. They've just gotten started. Now they want to flood the streets with former felons. God knows what's coming tomorrow. Right? I mean, one shock after the other. That's the Alinsky way, isn't it? Keep shocking the people.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-7282. Savage.
It was the law and enforced laws that made the playing field uneven. And the government must bring laws until the field is even for everyone. The government must undo what the government helped do.
Boy, he sure got that wrapped down, doesn't he? He's suffering, you know. You know, Al Sharpton's really been suffering from racism. Look how he seems underweight lately. I guess he just can't even afford a good meal. He's suffering, boy. Cushy job, money flowing in, visiting the White House as frequently as he would like. He's a frequent flyer into the White House. I guess he needs the government to help him because he's not doing well enough. We talked about the damage that affirmative action has done to America over the last 40 years, finally being somewhat put in its place by the U.S. Supreme Court, not covered by most of the major networks for a fear of offending minorities who have terrorized them, by the way, with fears of boycotts, fears of standing up and screaming racism at any turn. Let's listen to General Electric's spokesman, Al Sharpton. Clip two.
A society based on simple justice. As I travel the country, many say to me, Reverend Al, why do we need government intervention? Why do we need government laws to bring that about? Because it was government laws that helped to make it unequal.
Al, let me ask you something. Where did you earn your reverend degree from? Millions of people are asking this question, Reverend Sharpton. My PhD was earned from the University of California at Berkeley after many years of study and a dissertation that is in the scholarly journals. And I'm very proud of my PhD, which is why some call me Dr. Savage. But why are you called Reverend Sharpton? Can you explain to America where you got your divinity degree from? I'm sure you did. No chance in a million that you'd make it up. Where did you get your reverend degree from, your divinity degree? Now, if you want to hear more about it, the NAACP chimes in. And before we play clip number four from the NAACP, which is very angry, you'll understand, that they no longer have a tool to beat people up with called affirmative action, at least in the state of Michigan. It's limited to the state of Michigan, by the way. Every state in the land should have a ballot initiative to drive this Frankenstein out of their states, so that people have a fair chance from any race. But the NAACP says that the new ruling by the Supreme Court creates a higher hurdle. Of course it does. Of course it creates a higher hurdle. Now you actually have to earn a place to get the place. Of course it's a higher hurdle. You can't go to Harvard with an F, a D or an F. See what I mean? Now it's a harder to get into Harvard with a D average. A lot of kids would like to go to Harvard on a full scholarship with a D average. But you see, you can't do it anymore, I guess. Isn't it interesting that Jesse High Jackson and Al Sharpton claim that they're fighting for the African-American people when it's mainly themselves who seem to be benefiting? It is sickening. I believe in quality, and in order to have quality, in order to have quality in anything, you need to have equality. I mean, I've heard that the bad analogy of affirmative action applied to sports. That's a baby talk, but it's true. It's true. You want affirmative action? Let's go to the NFL. Take a guy 5'4" who weighs 140 pounds and say to him, oh, you've been deprived. You've been deprived. Let's put you on an NFL team and see him get crushed on the field. What do you do, blame racism on that? Let's listen to the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement Only of Colored People, in clip number 4.
This really is a case about restructuring the political process in a way that disfavors racial minorities. And the doctrine of political restructuring actually comes to us from the decade after Brown versus Board of Education, when so many jurisdictions tried to create higher hurdles for minorities who were seeking to enforce the promise of Brown and seeking to enforce equality.
Total nonsense, double talk, double speak, rubbish, pure rubbish. Let me give you an example. In the state of California, the Asian people, mainly Chinese Americans, are so successful at school because they come from a culture of learning. They come from parents who drive them to learn. They come from a book learning culture where education is considered very important. So many Chinese have gotten into the great universities in the University of California, such as UC Berkeley, that they've actually created affirmative action to keep Chinese Americans out. Now, is that your idea of fairness? Because as far as I'm concerned, if it was 100% Asian, it wouldn't bother me. In other words, if you based it purely on grades, go ahead, make my day. I'd like to see a university filled with smart kids. I could care less about what they look like. But if you're going to fill a university with dummies based upon something other than achievement, then what you're going to have is what you have today, which is universities that are worthless, which is why more and more people are turning away from going to college or sending their children to college. It sickens me to hear this kind of double talk and double speak rhetoric, which comes out of, well, let me stop right there. It goes on to clip 5. Here again is the NAACP saying that, oh, boo-hoo, the Supreme Court was wrong. In other words, the Supreme Court finally said, you're wrong and you don't like it? Let's hear clip 5 now.
The problem with it is that it essentially creates a higher hurdle for those who seek to deal with the issue of race and admissions. They would have to amend the Constitution.
A higher hurdle for those who seek to deal with the issue of race and admissions. So you can't get into Harvard with a D average now. Now you actually have to compete and get an A average. So of course it creates a higher hurdle. What is she talking about? What is she babbling on about? It's nonsense. Utter rubbish. We have a Supreme Court. We don't need a kangaroo court. And that's the end of it. I wish every state in the land had such a mandate. Let children apply based upon what they've done. Let them apply based upon what they have done. If you read Justice Sotomayor's dissent, you see that Justice Sotomayor, the brightest Latina in the history of the world, never belonged on the Supreme Court. Her dissent ran longer than the 4 opinions because she can't form an opinion without babbling on and on and on. Listen to clip 6 now, where the argument itself undoes itself. Listen to 6.
I have to say, if your viewers read nothing else, they should read Justice Sotomayor's dissent in this case, joined by Justice Ginsburg, because Justice Sotomayor, I think, presents to us the most powerful
nonsense
articulation.
She doesn't know her behind from her brains.
Race in our country.
Ah, she doesn't know anything. She was picked based upon her Hispanic heritage. Stop it! Stop your double talk! I can't take it anymore. Sotomayor was a moron. Can you say one thing she's ever written that you can remember? Give me one case Sotomayor ever decided that will be remembered in legal history. Give me one case. There is none. You look back in the past. In order to get to the Supreme Court, you had to be a brilliant jurist. You remember a name like Brandeis, Justice Brandeis. So name the university after Brandeis. Now, of course, his name has been sullied by what they've done to the university now. Brandeis has become a cesspool of liberalism, a madhouse. A madhouse, upside-down madhouse. But in his day, Brandeis was a brilliant jurist. So he was nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, all of a sudden, it's like the Mao Zedong days in communist China under Obama, where they pick totally unqualified people based solely upon race or sex or sexual orientation, not upon qualifications. Tell me what qualifications Sotomayor had to be made a Supreme Court justice. Tell me one opinion she wrote that is brilliant, because I don't know of any, and I've studied this issue. I'm sick of this. That's why the society is melting down. It's melting down because we've all stood here and taken this rubbish from the left-wing social engineers, and the end line is we're now a laughingstock in the world. What number is America in terms of education? How far have we fallen in the 30 years of affirmative action? Okay, you don't like reality, do you? Let me give you some reality. We are once the leaders in the world in our children's abilities in math and science. We're now number 30 or something like that. Why? Why don't you put two and two together and figure out how we got to four? We got to four because you put unqualified people into the teachers' roles, and then you put kids into schools they can never keep up with. And so what you did was, then you lowered the values of the school and said, it's the racism in the school. It's enough already. I'm going to quote from William Shakespeare's Hamlet, which I learned in high school, by the way. I don't think they still teach him. I think they teach rap music as an American cultural phenomenon. But one of the great soliloquies is to be or not to be, and I'm going to read it for a reason. It's from Hamlet. It's very short. It's worth listening to. And pardon my mangling of the English language. It's the best I can do as an immigrant son. I can't read it in the proper English manner that you might be accustomed to, but I'll do the best I can. To be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. Ah, that's a consummation devoutly to be wished. To die, to sleep perchance to dream. Ah, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come. When we have shuffled off this mortal coil, must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time? The oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin. Who would these fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. Thus conscience does make cowards of us all, and thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied over with the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pitch and moment, with disregard their currents turn awry, and lose the name of action. Soft you now, the fair Ophelia, nymph in all thy horizons, be all my sins remembered. There are a few phrases within that that you've probably heard over the course of your life and you didn't know where they came from. But one of them that keeps coming back to me is this one. It has to do with government, where he says, who would put up with this? Who would bear the whips and scorns of time? Are you ready for this? And the insolence of office, the law's delay. The insolence of office is the line that comes screaming off the page at me. Is that not what we're talking about? The insolence of this government? You say, well, okay, so what's your point? In one sense, what I'm saying to you is officials have been insolent from the beginning of civilization. And whether it been a sheriff in his time or a bureaucrat in his time or a government bureaucrat in our time, the insolence of office, there's nothing new to it. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We are an exceptional nation, and it doesn't mean we fight every war, but it does mean for years, peace through strength, and we stood up for people who were struggling for freedom. And that's what I think we ought to do a lot more of.
Now, I think McCain is insane, personally. Any man who runs from one radio or TV show to another, then runs across the Atlantic, arrives in one country or another, comes back calling for war, is by my definition a lunatic. At the very least, he's a warmonger. I almost feel that we should thank God he lost the election against Obama. I know you're going to say, what? You heard me. As bad as it is under Obama, I almost feel it was a blessing that this maniac did not become president, Because as sure as I'm sitting here, had this lunatic McCain become president, bombers, B-2 bombers would be flying over Russia or over Ukraine, possibly setting the Third World War in motion. The man is a madman. And boy, does he give Republicans a really bad name. As we swing into the end of hour number three on the Savage Nation today, let's go to some of the news headlines on michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, borders, language, culture. Well, I'm sorry to tell you this, but my winning streak against Hannity continues unabated. Audience figures for the top markets just came in, and it's looking very bad for the old wall banger. You have him on michaelsavage.com, and if I'm not for myself, who will be? You think I'm boasting? I'm telling you what's going on in the business. Who else going to tell you? You expect somebody else to tell you how well I'm doing? In New York, in Chicago, in San Francisco, in Dallas, in Washington, D.C., in Detroit, my numbers are gigantic compared to his. You want to see the real numbers? According to Nielsen, go look to michaelsavage.com and you'll see the real numbers. And then you can believe who you want. Numbers don't lie. Obama Asia tour starts with scathing attack by China state media. They attacked him before he got off the airplane. Texas is next. The attorney general warns feds eyeing state land after Bundy Ranch standoff. Boots on the ground. U.S. troops have arrived in Poland amid the crisis in Ukraine. That's not good. That is not very good. There are many, many other stories on michaelsavage.com, including the scary truth about your toothbrush. A single new pill mixes morphine and oxycodone, just what America needed right now. Just what the doctor didn't order. Or shall I say that's just what the doctor did order? For all the drug addicts out there, that's just what they need now, is a mixture of morphine and oxycodone. Just what they needed. A perfect drug for the time. Well, anyway, here are some of the other news headlines. Russia war games. British jets chase off Russian spy planes. Dutch scrambled jets after bombers approach. Really, it's getting hot out there. And Obama, meanwhile, is fiddling while Rome burns. He's dining on $300 sushi in Tokyo. And fire hoses are being turned on protesters over his trip in the Philippines. He's starting to look like the Nixon of our time. Yankee, go home. You won't see this in the New York Times, but I'm sorry to tell you. Wherever he goes, he's done something wrong. Nobody wants the guy. It's like, take this president, please. Meanwhile, the alcohol ban has pushed kids to pills, and it's being reported that marijuana feminizes men. Huh? Who would think marijuana feminizes men? How could that be? Well, it's called dope for a reason. Yeah. Yep, the National Minimum Drinking Age Act passed by Congress 30 years ago is a gross violation of civil liberties and must be repealed. They say that people should be able to drink at 18, not at 21. We have to be equal with Sri Lanka, Qatar. That's right. That's right. We have to be equal with the other nations. Well, I think we should reduce the drinking age to 12 because why limit it to 14 or 18? Now that you've deregulated marijuana regulations in Colorado, I think it's time to strike down this dictatorial national law. I think we need marijuana at birth. And I think that the liberals should have the right to give their children not only marijuana, but alcohol in their milk bottles. After all, wine was built into an Italian's background in the old days. How'd that work out for Italy? And look at France, wine-drinking France. How'd that work out for the French? And in ancient Egypt and Mesopotamia, wine was identified, and beer was a nourishing food in Egypt and Mesopotamia. Therefore, why don't we Mesopotamia our nation by lowering the drinking age? I think club drugs like ecstasy, methamphetamine, ketamine, should perhaps be given out in high schools in order to make certain that our children are kind of loose and free. I mean, after all, that's the libertarian viewpoint. Just read Time magazine. This has all been sarcasm. I hope you didn't take me seriously. This is Michael Savage signing off from the Savage Nation. Give me 15 minutes and I'll give you America.
Savage.